Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Getting settled in here. What is going on, everybody? This is the Golem Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio, and this is the Boxing Source Radio Show. I am your host, James Bell, lead boxing analyst for the Cold Hard Truth on Sports. You can catch CHCOnSports.com. Once again, HCOnSports.com. And if you want to get in on the boxing talk, you can call in at 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. We have, you know, a few things to cover here, but it's going to be a retail show. We got like an hour live session. We're just going to keep it pretty much within that hour this week. As there, you know, were a few things that went down over the course of last week. But we're going to try to, you know, cover those as quickly as possible. And then look ahead to what's coming up in June. So we just, you know, basically wanted to go through all of that, you know, today. What we have here is, you know, yesterday I would say we had a few things that went down, and a lot of things that came on, I would say, on-demand networks, as you had, you know, a few fights that were on the ESPN Plus network. So you're able to see, if you did have ESPN Plus, you're able to see those fights that did take place. You did have an ESPN Plus telecast that was on Saturday night, and you also had something that was featured on Friday. So that is, you know, if you did have that type of on-demand service, you were able to catch all of those events live. But we are you know, basically going to, you know, run by these fights here. Just wanted to go, you know, basically backward or, yeah, backwards, you know, from, I would say, you know, yesterday over into, like, Friday, so on and so forth. So what we did have on Saturday on that ESPN Plus, you did have two world title fights that did take place. The main event there was for the IBF Super Flyweight Championship, as you had the champion, Yuran Ancajas, facing Jonas Sultan, where Ancajas came in there with a 29-1-1 record. Jonas Sultan came there at 14-3. Both guys were coming from the Philippines and, you know, having this fight here over in Fresno, California. So it was basically the first, they were noting it as the first world title fight since, I think, 1925 between two Filipino-based fighters. And, you know, here with Yuran Ancajas, I mean, he was coming in there as the defending IBF super flyweight champion, you know, beating Mitro Arroyo back in 2016 to win it, and he's, you know, defended it about four times since. He was able to, you know, one of his key wins last year was against Jamie Conlon when he was able to go over to Belfast to fight Conlon, who was at the time undefeated, and, you know, got a TKO victory over Conlon. Basically, it almost looked like he was, you know, beating him pillar to post in that particular fight. And, you know, Conlon just didn't have a chance there. But him, he went up against Jonas Sultan, who came in with the record of 14-3. And, you know, he had his, you know, string of wins since 2015. You know, most of his fights were over in the Philippines. He did have, you know, a couple of fights in Japan and one fight over in South Africa. But was coming off of a unanimous decision win over John Real Casimiro to get this shot at the IBF super flyweight title. And, you know, for some people that, like, kind of looked at this particular matchup on paper, you know, they probably, you know, thought that it would be something where it would be a firefight between Ancajas and Sultan. Sultan there was, you know, at the time, number one contender. And it kind of looked like that, but you kind of saw a little difference into, you know, who was the more experienced fighter. And you saw that, you know, even though both fighters were able to connect on punches a few times fairly well, looked like, you know, Ancajas basically, you know, showed more patience in the ring. He did, you know, stay in the pocket a little bit more. He was more set in his punches. And, you know, with that, he was able to connect very well with the punches that he had. While we had Jonas Sultan on, you know, multiple occasions, you know, he was, you know, able to basically, like I said, stay patient, you know, take whatever Jonas Sultan was able to, you know, give to him. And that he was basically controlling the pace of this particular fight. And with that, he was, you know, getting the best out of Jonas Sultan, and like I was saying before with Sultan, that he was, you know, kind of like going forward a little bit too much, not really setting his punches. You know, there were times where he was off balance and that he slipped a few times. So, like late in the fight, I think it was late in the fight. Cajas and Sultan were in close quarters, and Sultan kind of went forward a little bit too far and ended up slipping and falling. But it was kind of like a testament to, you know, what that fight was basically showing for most of those that were watching on TV. It was just that you had Cajas that was the, you know, that played like he was a champ, fought like he was a champ, and you had Jonas Sultan there that, you know, fought like there was still a good few things that he needed to work on. And you know, on round 11, they had an accidental headbutt that caused a cut to the eye of Jonas Sultan, but it wasn't, you know, really significant enough to have any serious issues going to the end of the fight. They were able to finish the fight, and it went to the decision, and it was the defending moving to and score of 117-111. So two judges saw that, and Cajas won every single round but one. And Daniel Sandman gave, you know, Sultan three rounds instead of just one. So you do have, you know, Cajas defending his title, IBF super flyweight title there. Kind of, you do have run the side there as that WBC champion, so there may be a possibility that still run the side, then you're in Cajas unify those two belts in a fight in the future, and that could probably be a good little, you know, between those two, with, you know, Cajas, you know, being a little bit, you know, patient in his punches and what he's able to do, like it. Something to look out for if you don't have that title on the line as defending champion. Khalid Yafai faced David Carmona, where you had Yafai 23-0-0, David Carmona 21-5, losses with 5 draws. Carmona came in there losing 3 of his last 4 fights. He had, you know, 2 wins, 3 losses, and 1 draw in his last 6 fights, you know, going from what is on BoxRec.com. And he looked like, you know, Yafai just came in there and basically washed Carmona over the course of, you know, 6 rounds or so. And the thing about this particular fight, before the fight, at the weigh-in, David Carmona wasn't able to make weight for super flyweight. He was overweight. And because of that, he was not eligible to win that WBA title. But it didn't matter that much because he had, you know, Yafai there at 23-0-0, moving to 24-0-0, as he was able to get that stoppage victory as for round seven. Round seven, you had David Carmona not come out to start the seventh round there. So, and in that particular, you know, in that particular fight, you know, Yafai was able to, you know, execute very well. He knocked down David Carmona in multiple rounds, round one, round four, and also in round five. And it just, you know, it just seemed like David Carmona was not even in the same class as Khalid Yafai. So, I mean, it was something to where, you know, it was a lot different fight than the last fight that Khalid Yafai had, where he fought Show Ishida over in Cardiff as part of the turn for Anthony Joshua, when Joshua fought and defended his WBA super title and IBF titles and IBO titles against Carlos Sackham. So you had, you know, Khalid Yafai had that unanimous decision win over Show Ishida, but then, you know, fought David Carmona here and got a easy win. So, you know, with that, he, you know, basically gets this, I would say, an easy win, stays undefeated, and, you know, kind of like puts his name into the hat for that super flyweight division as to who is the best within that super flyweight division. You do still have Chocolatito Gonzalez floating around there in the super flyweight division. McWilliams Arroyo is still out there. Donnie Nietes is still out there. Rasheed Warren is still out there, although, I mean, I'm not necessarily sure what would be next in line for Warren. But, you know, all of those guys, Carlos Quadras is another one, although, you know, Quadras had two losses in a row and also lost to Gonzalez earlier in his career. So there's still, like, a lot of guys out there in that particular division where things can be settled. But, you know, for the time being, as long as Shuzaket Sorungvisai is there as the guy that, you know, beat the supposed number one pound-for-pound fighter in the sport, according to some, although we never really understood why he was called that, in Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez. So Sorungvisai is, you know, just still riding the wave here as the guy that they say is the best in the super flyweight division. So basically, we covered real fast what happened there in that particular fight card that was on ESPN+. Now, you did also have on Saturday a notable event, as you had in Quebec City the return of former IBF middleweight champion David Lemieux returned to the ring after his basically a whitewash loss to Billy Joe Saunders. He was able to go up against Kareem Arthur in Quebec City, and in that particular fight, WBC minor titles on the line, but those minor titles weren't necessarily on the line for David Lemieux at middleweight because he came into the weigh-in at 162 pounds. So he didn't necessarily make weight there for this, you know, international middleweight championship fight against Kareem Archer. But that, you know, didn't really necessarily matter for David Lemieux. I think he was just there to basically get his bearings back. And he was able to, you know, go 12 rounds against Archer. So he did get the win. He got a unanimous decision win. But none of those titles that were on the line changed hands. One became vacant, and Archer ended up keeping that particular title. So so David Lemieux moved to 39 wins, 4 losses, and Archer suffered his 5th loss of his career, going to 26-5-3. Real quick, we got area code 813 on here live with us. What's going on?
Hey, what's up, Jay? This is Terrell Collins from Tampa. And just in regards to follow up with the fight that you just spoke up in regards to Lemieux Archer, I didn't get to watch it, but I have reviewed some data in regards to that fight. But one thing you want to look at in regards to Lemieux, like, so we know that his last fight out, he was just totally destroyed and outboxed by our man Thunders. And we're and for that point, I'm able to call him by his name now, Billy Joe Sanders, instead of his prior name, which I want just don't need to mention. Really, but like for the view, definitely known as a classic puncher, right? That's his calling card. And like I said, going back to the Lemieux Sanders fight, he was exposed in so many different ways. Not able to orchestrate a different strategy in the ring while in fight. Not able to become more something else. So, like I said, this fight right here against Archer was definitely a good comeback fight for him. He definitely admitted that the fight was tougher. The opponent was tougher than what he thought it would be. But he definitely got some good rounds in, full 12 rounds, things like that. So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, I think Lemieux is still somewhat of a player at 160. But, I mean, just going forward, I mean, we'll see if he can enhance his skill set. And instead of just been known as a puncher. Because, like I said, with Sanders, that's where we know he got exposed in so many ways. And what's funny about that fight, I noticed a lot of anticipation in his own camp that they could secure that win against Sanders when they were just bears and probably taken down a couple steps in that same regard.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I kind of felt that, you know, with Lemieux here going up against this guy was just something to, you know, just have him step back into the ring and try to get a little bit of his confidence back after, you know, that fairly shutout loss that he had to Billy Joe Saunders. And, you know, with that, he, you know, just kind of like said, you know, let me just get in there. You know, even though I'm a little bit overweight, at least I'm not, you know, too overweight to where, you know, could, you know, hardly move around the ring. But you know, with that, he kind of, you know, got his bearings back a little bit and was able to get through that fight there through 12 rounds and, you know, end up scoring the decision win. So we'll, you know, see what is next in store for him because, you know, with the type of fighting style that he has, you know, opens him up for multiple opportunities against various opponents. Whether it's, you know, for, you know, a title like what Ryota Murata has with that WBA regular title. But if not, then to, you know, see if he could get back in the thick of things against like a Gary O'Sullivan. If O'Sullivan is not, you know, being chosen for a fight here in the future or, you know, against, I would say, Jason Quigley, but the thing with Quigley is that he is ranked number 3 in the WBC, and I think, you know, with him, you know, he may, you know, have like another fight coming up here very soon. So that's something there that, you know, we could basically look out for right there.
Yeah, so I mean, so in that regard, just to follow up with that, so it'll be very interesting, like you said, to see what's next for Lemieux, what type of opponent would he pick, what in regards to what level, things like that. So, and like I said, what's going to maintain for him is to see if he can morph to something that's something better than what we've always known him as. So, definitely we'll see.
No doubt about that. And earlier, before you got on, I went through what happened over on ESPN Plus on Saturday with the two super flyweight championships on the line, and both of the champions were able to defend their titles there. So you did have the IBF champion, you know, be able to win against the number one contender, as Akahas was able to win against Jonas Sultan, and Khalid Yafai basically had an easy win over David Carmona, which was like a voluntary defense. So he was able to, you know, get those two fights out of the way. Were you able to catch any highlights of either of those two fights before I get this next person on?
Unfortunately, no, I'm not up to speed on those fights. I'm aware of those fights that they took place, but not able to intelligently comment on those at this time.
All right, gotcha. All right, I'm going to bring in 646 online. What's going on there, 646?
Hey, what's going on, JR, man? Good show today. I was thinking about some stuff with the fight that happened this weekend. Well, this past weekend with, I don't know how to pronounce, the Filipino kid. I don't really know how to pronounce his name. The one that fights with Top Rank, and Cajas, something like that.
Yes.
The supposed new Manny Pacquiao. I wasn't too impressed with his performance at all. The fight to me stunk out loud. I don't think that the styles meshed. I think what we can take from this weekend is that Inoue, the monster from Japan, is the real deal. He's probably, I would say he's definitely top 10 pound for pound right now. And I think he's going to dominate the WBSS tournament that he entered, because I don't see how anyone deals with his power and his intensity and his skill.
Yeah, with that particular fight that they had, I think it was on the previous day in Japan, where he was able to face Jamie McDonald for the WBA Bantamweight Championship, where he was able to, you know, move up as he had been formerly the WBO Super Flyweight Champion. But then faced Jamie McDonald, and he, you know, even though, you know, McDonald was a taller fighter and had the reach, it looked like he didn't have much of a chance at all against, you know, this guy here in, you know, Naoya Inoue, and it just almost seemed like he was basically a buzzsaw, and he just, you know, started working the body early on Jamie McDonald, and after doing that, I mean, McDonald just broke down like he about folded like a chair, like a wooden chair or something like that, and getting broken up into pieces. And he, you know, had a knockdown earlier, but then ended up having that fight stopped there at the 152 mark of round one. And so, I mean, I didn't really think that you had, you know, McDonald there have much of a shot against Inoue in that sense. And yes, while Inoue is, you know, there as, you know, you can enter his hat as one of the best fighters in the sport, I would like to see how he would do against some of these other guys in the bantamweight division. A lot of these a lot of the titles, it seems like, in that particular division are vacant, and you still have the WBO champion, Zelina Tete, there still at bantamweight. So, that I mean, if the, a possible, you know, in a way, Tete match, if not, you know, by the end of this year, then sometime next year would be the top fight in that bantamweight division. What a 6-4-6. What would you think about a potential match between Inoue and Tete there?
Honestly, I think anyone at 118, 115, even up to 122, I think that's just an easy matchup for him. The kid is just, he's too powerful, too precise, and he's just relentless. This, I'm telling you, this kid is like a fucking cyborg, man. I'm telling you, no one is going to touch him. And I think he's probably going to be considered top 5 pound for pound by the end of next year.
Yeah. I mean, he, you know, on paper, it seems like he would be the most skilled guy out there within the weights that you did, you know, specify. He did, like I say, relinquish that WBO super flyweight championship to move up to face Jamie McDonald. And, you know, other than, you know, with Zelina Tete as the WBO bantamweight champion, you really don't have that many skilled fighters within those divisions. And, I mean, we saw, you know, Ray Vargas against Azat Hovhannisian, you know, what was that, May 5th or whatever it was. And Vargas didn't really look very impressive against Hovhannisian, where he should have been able to, like, use his height and reach to outbox the dude, but he wasn't able to do that. And you have, you know, the other fighters that are out there that, you know, kind of don't really necessarily have the skill to basically beat someone like Naoya in a way. Diego De La Hoya has an upcoming fight soon, and, you know, later on, maybe later on this year, he may have that opportunity to fight for the WBC Super Bantamweight Championship. You know, I don't really see anything that stands out with Diego De La Hoya either that says that he could be potentially one of the best fighters within those weight classes. That was, like, you know, another thing that, you know, I was trying to, you know, look into as far as, like, what happened over the course of this week, because there wasn't, you know, really that much that went down over this Memorial Day weekend here stateside. Looking here, what did you think about David Lemieux returning to the ring against Kareem Archer, but ended up being 2 pounds overweight?
Lemieux, to me, his career is pretty much done. He's not a good enough boxer to do anything with anyone at 160. All the top guys at 160 beats him and beats him fairly easily. And to me, he doesn't have the power to mess with anyone in the higher weight division. So he's more of a tweener right now. So I think they're just going to try to get whatever money they can get out of him, you know, have him fight in Montreal where he's popular, can sell some tickets. But he's never been a top-level fighter, and he's never going to be a top-level fighter. It's just going to, you know, like, how do you go basically a full fight with someone who's not even a really good fighter? And you were overweight, so it's not like you were weight trained because you were overweight, but yet you still had to go a full 12 rounds with someone who was a no-hoper. That should have been barbecue chicken, easy knockout. So that just tells you the level that Lemieux is at, and that's the level he's been at, the level he's going to stay at. He's basically been exposed by Saunders, I think. Saunders made him really question himself as a boxer. Because you know what, if you just get knocked out, all right, whatever, it happens. You get knocked out, you get back up, you go fight again. But when you get embarrassed the way that he got embarrassed versus Saunders, to me that's a career altering defeat. Because now you're mm-hmm. like, yo, anybody that can move, they know the game plan now. All they got to do is box yep. and move around me. I'm too slow. I got power, but I can't use it because I'm too damn slow to hit you. You can see the punches coming from a mile away. So it's like, now what is he going to do against someone like a Charlo or a Jacobs or any of the top guys yep. at 160? You can't do anything with them. Yep. They're going to box his head off.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that is just something there where that fight against Saunders just proved that he really couldn't move around the wing that he couldn't move around the ring, and anybody that, like you said, anybody that could move would basically just outbox him to smithereens. So I just like saw that, you know, with that, you basically given up the blueprint to take out David Lemieux in that case. So I don't know where he's going to be able to go from here, because, you know, guys like Andre, guys like Charlo, guys like Jacobs would be able to, you know, outbox him, and it wouldn't even be it wouldn't even be really close if those potential fights took place, you know. So that's why I got out of that result right there. So real quick, I mean, that like kind of, you know, covered most of the things there that happened over the previous week. If you're listening live on the Go Long Media channel on Blog Talk Radio and want to talk boxing, you can get in at 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. Just wanted to go forward to the next couple of weeks here in the sport of boxing. Like I said, you had like Memorial Weekend here in the States, and then the next week over, I really don't have a lot of notable things going on. So we kind of like fast forward to June 9th, where you do have the WBO Welterweight Championship on the line, over in Las Vegas, as the Hornet, Jeff Horn, defends his WBO Welterweight title and undefeated record against Terrence T. Bud Crawford. This will be at the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas. And I thought this card would have been on ESPN, but it apparently is not. It will be on ESPN Plus. You also will have, as part of the card there by Top Rank, you will have Shakur Stevenson be included in the card. You'll also have, another guy from Omaha, Nebraska, and Steve Nelson. That will be part of the card. Both of those guys also undefeated there. And undefeated welterweight Jose Benavidez will be going on against another undefeated guy in Frank Rojas in the 10-round fight. So you're going to have a few notable guys on the particular card and a few undefeated records be put on the line here. But in reference to the particular main event between Jeff Horn and Terrence Crawford, no, not Joe Horn like Stephen A. Smith likes to say, but Jeff Horn, is that, you know, there seems like there's been a little bit of back and forth banter between Terrence Crawford and Jeff Horn. And that, you know, Jeff Horn says that he wants to really prove himself to be, you know, the best quote-unquote welterweight out there, and by by taking out Terrence Crawford and saying that he's going to bully Terrence Crawford and, you know, try to knock him out right there. But I don't know about all that. Terrell, what you got on this particular fight?
Yeah, I'm definitely glad to talk about this fight yet again. I'm trying to think about a fight where we had one where we have a well-known contestant. We know their resume quite well, and everyone is familiar with him on a national level, and even somewhat of an international level, dating back to Crawford's win back when he won the UK. Who's they beat? Who's the Frampton? What's the guy's name he beat over there? Back overseas in England. You guys recall that?
Oh, with Bud Crawford?
Yeah. Who's that he beat overseas back in England about 6 years ago?
Bud Crawford beat, who was it? That was a good little while ago, too, though.
That really announced his presence on the world level in that regard. But fast forward to this fight with him and Horn. So you look at Crawford, we know Crawford. He's a good product. Everyone has consumed this product. But in regards to Jeff Horn, yes, he beat Manny Pacquiao. Yes, a lot of us think that he should have lost that fight, but nevertheless, that didn't happen. But what I'm getting at is like he's speaking of that back and forth from both sides. Now, Crawford, we know he can walk it like he talk it. We know that. But with Horn, it's kind of crazy how he's talking, not just him, but his camp as well. I read an article the other day where it said, Crawford is nothing special. He's just a man. I'm like, okay. Okay, you guys are really digging yourself deep in here. You know, because like we know Crawford, despite the fact he's coming up from 140 after unifying that division, we know he's a both-handed fighter, orthodox, southpaw, fight off the back foot, good lateral movement, good punch output, good power. So, I mean, Crawford does a lot of things very well. We know that. So, but like I said, and you know, this is why I love boxing. Because at the bottom line, regardless of what's said, regardless of the trash talk, it's two guys getting in there, mano y mano, one man versus another man. So it is all going to be settled very soon. And I think that we all anticipate that Horn's going to get a big case of humble pie, which I think is definitely due to him. Because if you can't walk like you're talking on an international level, then you will be exposed, and I think that's what a lot of people anticipate, considering Crawford's wide skill set.
Yeah, and that's what I'm waiting on is, you know, seeing where, you know, Crawford is going to be able to utilize his skill set against somebody that, you know, may be a lot more limited in the skill department in that sense. So I'd like to see if, you know, the grit of Jeff Horn may be enough, but I just think that here it's just going to be, you know, a lot different going up against somebody that's younger, that's, you know, more in tune with being in the boxing ring than Manny Pacquiao here and Terrence Crawford, and that, you know, somebody that is looking towards winning a title in another division there. 646, what you got?
Well, I think Crawford's going to dispatch Horn pretty easily. Horn is choosing the wrong person to antagonize because Terrence Crawford is known to have a nasty, nasty mean streak. And to get that man pissed off against you before you step into the ring with him, I'm predicting that Terrence Crawford is going to knock Jeff Horn out probably inside of 6 rounds. I think he's just going to go. He's going to demolish him. He's going to punish him. And it's a shame that I won't be able to see it because I'm not going to pay $4.99 to get the ESPN Plus app. So, you know, hopefully there's a stream out there somewhere because, yeah, I'm not going to be paying to see that. I guess I'm going to be watching the Leo Santa Cruz versus Abner Morris fight on Showtime because I already got Showtime. So I guess I'll be watching that instead in the meantime.
And that's the thing that with these on-demand channels, we're not, you know, necessarily catching up or catching on to those yet. But I think what's going to end up happening is the demand is going to rise a little bit more once more of the higher or more popular sporting events start trying to inch towards providing their content on ESPN Plus instead of the regular, you know, ESPNs and that type of thing. So it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, boxing is going to be the, I would say, the front runner or the test sport that they're going to be putting out there for ESPN Plus, and then watch these other sports start following suit within the next year or so. I just see that happening here because, I mean, the overall market is not really a fan of cable television anymore because of the price. I mean, the price is getting to be, you know, too high and too unnecessary because you have all these channels and, you know, you're not going to be watching all these channels. So it's like, what's the point of paying all that if you ain't going to be watching all the channels? So they just say, you know what, look, let's just provide this on-demand service and just give them, you know, such amount of money to pay in order for the folks to have it. So that seems like that's going to be the route to go here in the next year to 2 years. Reference to that, but for now, like you were saying there, you know, we're going to be watching the fight that's going to be happening in the Staples Center as you have the WBA regular featherweight champion Abner Mares in a rematch against the WBA super world featherweight champion Leo Santa Cruz. And I mean, it's saying like Mares has a new trainer, new skills, or whatever it is. You know, coming in there, I guess they're promoting him as a new fighter going up against Leo Santa Cruz, but I just don't think that, you know, it's going to be enough to get him over the hump against Santa Cruz in this particular fight, in that Santa Cruz is going to be able to retain his title there and see what he's going to be able to do at featherweight. If it were me, for June 9th, I would find a way to get money or to sponsor money, even though he probably doesn't need it, and give a ticket to Gary Russell Jr. and have him fly from here in D.C. over to Los Angeles and watch this particular fight and then find out who the winner is and then step into that ring and challenge that winner to a unification fight. Because that might be the only... That might be what it takes for these guys to actually, you know, man up and step into the ring against Gary Russell Jr. Because I really don't see either one of these guys really inclined to do anything of that sort right now. So I'd be interested to see who comes out the winner. I think it would be Santa Cruz. And if Santa Cruz is able to, you know, step up and step in the ring against Gary Russell Jr. in a unification fight.
Yeah, I definitely like the sound of that as well, because we know that Gary Russell Jr. just came off a fight victory last week, and really just aside from that, he says that he only wants about six fights left in him, things like that, and he wants to fight the top fight. So, like you suggest, that would be a great thing for him to be in the ring, be in the venue at the time, and get in the ring to generate some buzz and interest in him fighting the winner of Abner Mares and Leo Santa Cruz. I mean, like I said, you want to fight the top fighters, then yeah, definitely attend that event and be there and make yourself a part of it. I mean, like I said, you want to fight the big fights, they're there. Some of these fights are there. And it's just no reason for him to be only fighting once a year. It's just ridiculous. You're not injured, you're not hurt, you don't have no promotion issues, you got name recognition, you got those things working for you that many boxers dream of having, and yet you're not necessarily utilize those for whatever reason that they're going on, whether it be business or professional or personal. I would love to see that happen as well.
Right. Yep. What you got, 646?
Can you hear me? Kick his ass. To me, Santa Cruz is underrated, highly underrated. So I think Santa Cruz is going to, because Marvin's hasn't really looked good in his last few fights, and it's been set up for him to look good. I think Santa Cruz is just a top boxer. He's relentless, and I think that he's gonna dominate the fight. It's going to be exciting in some spots, but I think Santa Cruz is going to end up with a unanimous decision by a fairly wide margin, maybe eight rounds to four, 9 rounds to 3, something like that. I think it's going to be a pretty good fight. You know, I'm also looking forward to seeing Charlo take on, you know, your guy Trout. Let's see what Charlo can do here and if he can secure some bigger fights in the future, some unification bouts in the future. So it's going to be all around a great boxing night that night because you got Tyson Fury also returning that same day. So it's going to be basically like 3 cards in one day. I don't know how we're going to be able to watch it all. You know, it's going to have to pick and choose some things because some of this stuff really overlaps. So I think Santa Cruz is going to win by unanimous decision. I think my guy Charlo is going to knock out Trout. I think Fury is going to look decent against a no-hoper. And obviously, we all think Crawford is going to beat the hell out of Horn. Joe Horn, as Steve Mayer said.
Yep. Now, yeah, you do have, you know, Charlo going up against Austin Trout. And, you know, the thing with that one is that the thought process is that Charlo is going to basically, you know, wash Trout. And, you know, with him being under Derrick James, he's been like a whole different fighter than what he used to be. And he's been, of course, scoring those string of knockouts there. And that it would be a lot different than when, you know, Trout was able to face you know, Jarrett Hurd, where he was able to outbox Jarrett Hurd until he was, you know, tired, you know, basically tired and washed out. But he says that, you know, from, you know, last week he was under a different training program and that he should be able to, you know, feel very well there in the ring against Jermell Charlo. But, you know, the word is that, you know, a lot of people are kind of like counting Austin Trout out in this particular fight right there. So we're going to see in the next 2 weeks how that basically turns out to see, you know, if, you know, if Charlo is going to be able to get the victory or if Charlo ends up retaining that WBC Super Welterweight title and looking towards, you know, unification bouts in that particular division right there. So that covers, you know, everything that there is mainly for, you know, those next couple of weeks. You do have, you know, Derrick James, other notable boxer that's going to be out there. That's scheduled for the 16th of June with Errol Spence Jr. going up against Carlos Ocampo over at the Ford Center in Frisco, Texas, and with that co-feature being Devin Alexander against Andre Berto. So that's going to be something there that we're going to be looking into in depth a little bit later on in the month, within the next week or the next 2 weeks or so. So be on the lookout for all of that. We have about like 5 minutes or so left on the live show. If you want to get in before the live show ends, it's 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press 1 key to get on queue and you'll be able to talk live on the show. A couple of things here that I wanted to cover here that happened over the course of the week. 2 notable purse bids took place. I think it was like as you had a purse bid between or for a fight against Dillian White and Kubrat Pulev, as Dillian White is currently the number 4 ranked contender for the IBF Heavyweight Championship and Kubrat Pulev is the number 2 contender and the highest ranked contender for the IBF championship, currently held by Anthony Joshua. And the backstory with that, 646, if you want to get into it a little bit with the backstory on what happened with this particular purse bid between or for those two guys stepping into the ring.
Well, what happened to me is very interesting. Obviously, we know Dillian White is represented by Eddie Hearn and Matchroom Sports. And you have Kubat Pulev, who is represented by Sauerland. So when the purse bid came out, it turns out that the winner of the purse bid is a company called Epic Sports and Entertainment, which is fronted by former Don King lawyer John Wirt. So he bid $1.5 million on it. And then you had Eddie Hearn and Sauerland both only bid.
It's like it paid over $800.
Hold on. Baby's crying.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Yeah.
I'll be back.
All right. I'll cover the rest out here. All right. Just real quick. With the purse bid, you had, you know, the two promoters at Matchroom Boxing, Eddie Hearn for Dillian White and Team Sauerland for Kubat Pulev. Both of them bid, you know, a shade over $800,000, while Epic Sports and Entertainment won the bid by almost doubling the bids that both promoting companies put up, with a $1.5 million bid. Now, with this purse bid, the higher-ranked contender gets 75% of that total purse, and the lower-ranked contender gets 25%. So, Kubat Pulev will end up getting over $1 million for this particular fight if it takes place, while Dillian White gets just a shade over $375,000. Now, you know, 646 and I were able to, you know, talk about this a little bit after the purse bid was completed. And my analysis of it was that in the side of Matchroom Boxing and Eddie Hearn was, he didn't feel like he wanted to spend that much money to have Dillian White fight somebody from Team Sauerland, and that, you know, he would end up just getting 25% of a purse there. So it's like, well, why am I going to put up this amount of money or such and such amount of money, and then, you know, also cover the, you know, the promotional costs, booking the venue, advertising, trying to get sponsors for something to where I, as a, you know, promoter, aren't going to get much return on it. So he was like, you know what, let me not, you know, necessarily do that and just end up passing on it. And so now with, you have Epic Sports and Entertainment winning that bid. They have about, you know, up until June 8th to have the signed contracts for both Kubat Pulev and Dillian White for the potential fight to take place, which would have to happen by August 24th or so to be the mandatory contender for that IBF heavyweight championship. So that was one of the things there that kind of went down over in the, you know, the IBF offices in Springfield, New Jersey. So you did have that. And the other thing was that happened a little bit later in the week was a quote unquote a purse bid of sorts for the vacant WBC welterweight championship. That is going to be between Sean Showtime Porter and Danny Garcia. And so it was, you know, basically a purse bid that supposedly was put up, but with since both Danny Garcia and Sean Porter are basically, you know, under the same advisement, there was no need for a purse bid to take place. They did agree to a welterweight bout. This is through Mike Coppinger of Ring Magazine, and that they say that the bout will take place at the Barclays Center on August 25th, and it will be on Showtime. And so that means August 25th is going to be in Brooklyn, and another big fight in Brooklyn. And like I said, it will be for the vacant WBC welterweight championship, and that, you know, the winner would be in play for a unification fight on down the line. So we got Danny Garcia, Sean Porter. Of course, they, you know, talked a lot of trash between each other in Garcia's last fight, where he was able to knock out Bam Bam Rios there. So it's going to be something that I feel is going to have, like, a lot of promotion, a lot of pub, because all of those guys, Danny Garcia, his father Angel Garcia, Sean Showtime Porter, and his father Kenny Porter, you know, have the gift of gab, so to speak. So that could, you know, get or garner a lot of interest for fans of the sport of boxing to attend this particular matchup. They did have, you know, a fairly successful event with that unification fight between Danny Garcia and Keith Thurman there at the Barclays Center, you know, in that particular instance. So I think it will be the same case here when this fight actually does take place. First off, want to open up with Terrell. What are your thoughts about this?
Yeah, even speaking of this fight, you know, I got some content that I need to get done in regards to the welterweight division, but about in regards to the ins and outs and the puzzle that is the welterweight division. It's announced. I'm so glad we got to pay for it. And even just a Keith Thurman reference, hope that ain't no car accident, no skateboard, no whatever kind of father that either father incurs in the lead up to the fight, because we definitely need this fight to happen in order to figure out the welterweight division. I mean, you just look at it, we got Thurman that's still out there, we got Crawford, and one of the biggest things about Crawford Horn, that fight coming up, that I should have made mention of before. We know this is going to be Crawford's first fight at 147. And
yeah,
the thing about that, he, unspoken, he has to make a statement at 147 to put certain people on notice. Because the thing about it, he expects to get his WBO title, and then from that point, Crawford ain't gonna fight no. He ain't fight no patches after that. So we expect for him to compete at the top level of the division. You know, Crawford is not known for taking soft fights, like some other people like Garcia, people like that, and even Thurman to a degree. I mean, the welterweight division is on fire. There's so many pieces of the ins and outs of the division, and continuing on, Horn Crawford, Porter Thurman. And like I said, I can't wait to sit back and watch the first fight. And trash talk both sides of the camp is going to be tremendous. We all know about Danny Garcia's father. He's just monumental and in a sense, takes over for, and speaks for his son. We know all about that. And by the same time, there's zero back down in regards to the Porter camp as well. So that's going to be a fun part of the piece to cover as well. But like I said, the welterweight division is so many moving pieces of it. You got Matisse Pacquiao out there hanging in the wings at the B level, in a sense, you know. And there's so many other, a few other fighters in there that are French contenders that you have to consider as well. for possible opponents of these champions as they look to build for the best fights in the 147 class division. So it's a great, great announcement. So I'm glad, so glad to hear it. And just hope that if we get there, no injuries, boom.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a lot of fights that are coming up here in the 147-pound division, many of them that you mentioned. You do, you know, also have as part of the second tier, like a tournament of sorts that's going down within the WBC, I think. So there's going to be a good amount of clarity there at 147 pounds in the year 2018. And, you know, I'm all here for it. So I'm just waiting to see what happens and who comes out by the end of 2018 as the best guy there at 147 pounds. What you got on the 646? He's not sure, yeah, not sure if he was, you know, able to check back in here. Yeah, after, you know, tending to family things. So I'm not sure if he's able to get back on right here. But that was, you know, one thing that, or two things that I wanted to cover here in this particular podcast. And I was able to get through that. And so pretty much like on that note, I'm gonna put a close to this episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show. And I want folks to be sure to catch the next episode that is scheduled here for June 3rd. And also be able to check out the sister shows here on the Golan Media Channel. You do have the Cold Hard Truth on Sports. That's on Tuesday night, scheduled for 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So be on the lookout for that and catch the articles on the Cold Hard Truth on Sports website, DCHC on Sports. Follow me on social media at The Boxing Source on Facebook, Boxing Source 2 on Twitter, and The Boxing Source on Google and through YouTube and so on and so forth there. Fortunately, I did have a 646 drop out. But there will be a special or a certain week that'll happen starting, I would say, starting early Monday. We're going to have a little fun of sorts. It won't be within the Boxing Source, or so to speak, although it might be on YouTube. But since I've been claimed or been accused of being a hater of a specific boxer that holds a world title, I will fulfill their request and start with the hateration. And so on social media, you'll be seeing certain snippets of that hateration of this said boxer. So for those that are, you know, in the social media channels, you may have an idea who it is and you may be a little bit entertained by it. So I did have to, you know, get that out of the way right there. Anything you want to say, Terrell, before I close out?
No. I mean, it's just you know, we got a brief rest, which is a holiday. So after that, we want to really get back started here in the month of June to that. What is this? Second, third quarter for the year. So everything going good so far. It's just great coverage. I mean, just so many movements, and particularly, I think probably what's kind of unspoken is the movement of the streaming business with the announcement of Danzen, ESPN Plus, things like that. It's kind of changing slowly and changing the landscape of boxing, how we consume the sport going forward. So, I mean, that's something that's spoken of as well.
Yeah, no doubt. So that's a thing that we're going to be checking out here in the near future. And so on that note, I'm going to put a close to the show. And like I say at the end of every show, folks, the point of boxing is to hit and not get hit. At the stand and trade. On that note, I'm out. Have a good evening, everyone.
All right.